What's up, everybody? Welcome into another edition of the Fast Friday podcast on Sikkim365.com. I'm Craig Smoke, team reporter for Sikkim365.com, also host of Unnecessary Roughness, weekdays 12 to 3 on ESPN Central Texas. And joined, as always, by director of broadcasting, also recruiting and team reporter for Sikkim365, Grayson Grundhafer. And Grayson, how are we doing this week?
Man, how exciting is this? Got football in a week and a half, a little over a week.
Week from tomorrow for those listening on a Friday.
Right, exactly. So it's coming up really quickly, and I gotta say, it's just getting more and more exciting. And I think we're starting to see, I think at these media sessions, the team's kind of getting ready. They had that kind of fake game week going on this week, and then they're obviously going to have a real game week next week. So yeah, it's just getting really exciting. Lots of football going on, and now it's finally here. We don't have to just talk about imaginary football. Now it's just, you know, football is actually here.
Yeah, it's very nice. It's very nice that we'll have actual wins and losses to discuss, and no more speculation about who's going to play where, what's going to go on here, any of that kind of stuff. We'll just know. And of course, new questions will form as we go on along throughout this journey of the 2019 season. But it'll be nice to have some answers. It'll be nice to just have something of substance. Actual substance, actual result to talk about rather than just practices as well. But practice is sort of kind of what we'll talk about on the episode today. Next week, we'll start actually being able to preview games, which is one benefit to this podcast is we'll have actual games to talk about. But we'll do that next week. We'll take a look at SFA and do so subsequently throughout the rest of the year. Each and every week with the upcoming opponents. But this week, we're just going to kind of take a look at what some of the headlines have been, some of the things that Matt Rhule has had to say, and just some notes that have been out there over the last couple of days. We'll also get into your mailbag to close it out, as we always do. And that's how we're going to go about things this afternoon, so or today, morning, night, whenever you are actually listening to this. But let's start off with one of the probably more popular notes of this week, and that was the issuing of single-digit jerseys, as those have started to get rolled out, and we still have three more to be decided, which, knowing this podcast, knowing that we said, oh, there's nothing recruiting going on last week, and then Mose Jeffrey commits like right away, which we need to add that to things we need to talk about, by the way, but you know, we had that happen, which was great, because it's like, hey, a good surprise, there was a commit when you weren't expecting one. But I fully expect that I'll talk about them having three single digits remaining, and by the time you listen to this, those will probably be filled. That's just kind of the way that it works.
Doesn't it always work like that?
Yeah, pretty much.
Absolutely.
Pretty much. So let's get into the single digits that we actually do know about at the time of recording on a Thursday afternoon. And we've got some repeat guys. We've also got some new faces as well in the mix, and we'll go in order. Number one this year is going to be sported by one Graylin Arnold, who was wearing number 4. He'll now wear number 1. Matt Rhule has raved about Graylin Arnold this offseason. Other coaches have spoken highly of him as well. I think that at times this coaching staff certainly tries to hold back too much on guys and trying to get too excited about them, because, you know, you could have 5 great practices in a row and all of a sudden have a bad practice, and that kind of changes things. But they haven't shied away that much from talking very glowingly of Graylin, so it appears as if that year away, so to speak, allowed him an opportunity to not only get super healthy for the first time in a long time, but also mature, which was a term we heard Matt Rhule also use for the likes of R.J. Snead, another standout from camp so far. But Graylin Arnold wearing number 1. Switching from number 4, and I think a great sign that he was away and still with the team, obviously, and all of that, just unable to play last year. And now he's back, and he's not only back, but he's one of your single digits.
Yeah, and it's pretty awesome. So this week, obviously, we got to talk to Coach Rhule, but we also got to talk to 3 names on this, you know, list, and one of them was Graylin Arnold. And Graylin definitely talked about how he matured on and off the field, really, and mentally and physically with that red shirt year. But he also kind of was truthful with the fact that when he first decided to red shirt, he was a little in his head about it. And I think, you know, he meant it kind of, it was negative for him at a certain point. But now I think he sees the benefits of it. I think he found a really good off season to train and get himself to this level. And now he's found a really good position that he appears to be extremely comfortable with. And I think it's going to allow him to play much more freely. And he also said, you know, playing that safety position, you get to really see the field more. And I think that may help him a little bit, just be able to diagnose the play, read quarterback's eyes, and read offenses as well. But Graylin seemed like he was in great spirits when we talked to him this week. And he's a guy that I think everyone, including the coaches, including himself, including the media, is expecting to take a big jump this season.
Definitely. Number two remains open as of right now. Number three has been awarded once again to safety Chris Miller, the senior, and that's nothing new. He's one of the repeat guys, so he's going to continue to wear number three. And I've heard some good things about him this offseason, but you know, just any talk about the safeties, quite frankly, I'm just hesitant to get too excited until I see it for myself. So, hey, get to see Chris Miller and company there in about a week at McLean Stadium across the street from where we sit right now on our spot on the lot, thanks to Brazos Parking. So, Chris Miller, once again, getting the single-digit number three honor.
Yeah, it's pretty cool how you just said the safety position is one that, you know, we're not fully bought in on, and then you look at the list, and of course there's three safeties on the list, which is kind of funny. But yeah, Chris is a guy that, another one I think everyone's expecting to take a big step, third year in the system. It's time for him to really show kind of what everyone thought he was going to be when he came to Baylor, and Graylin's kind of in that same boat. But it's just, Chris is a guy that, you know, had so much potential coming in and hasn't really reached it quite yet, but you know, it's an opportunity now. And I think that he's a guy that a lot of people are split on. A lot of people think he could have a monster senior year. A lot of people are still unsure about what he's going to be able to do. But the fact of the matter is if Christian Morgan is still out for a little while, then he's going to play a ton. And he might not come off the field very much, because the backup are, you know, JT Woods, who obviously played a lot last year. But then after that, it's Young, Takeem Vance, and Will Williams. I mean, it's a young group behind him, so he's going to have to rise to the occasion if Baylor wants to have a good year.
So, Graylin Arnold at number one, two is open, Chris Miller at three, and Clay Johnston drops a four from his jersey. He is a new single digit, and instead of 44, will wear number four this year and go out as a single digit since it's his senior year as well. And I thought this was pretty cool to see, and have to say, not everybody can really rock a single digit and look good doing it. So I was curious to see how four was going to look, but looks pretty good on him. I think it's always cool. I always liked how college football, like, your best players were single digits, and there wasn't too many rules about, like, obviously O linemen still have to be in a certain number range, so there are some rules. But you know, I just think of, like, watching Peter Wirt growing up at Florida State rocking number two and just making it look so sweet wearing the number two. So Clay Johnston now in the number four, and I was a little hesitant. I didn't know how it would fit him, but I think it actually looks pretty cool.
Yeah, now he's no longer Bryce Hager's lookalike,
right,
which is kind of nice. But yeah, the number looked great on Clay, and I think he's a great choice for this. He's a guy, he was at Big 12 Media Days. He just seems to really have maybe stepped up in a leadership role for this team, obviously getting, you know, blessed with getting this award type thing voted on by his teammates. But I think we've heard that a lot, is him taking that next step. And he was really excited when we talked to him. He was another one we got to talk to this week. And he was laughing a little bit because he was kind of telling us a lot about the defense, and he kind of stopped himself a little bit. And he was like, I don't know if I should be telling you all this, but,
well, he was the man that basically unveiled that the 3-4 is going to be more prominent this year,
right,
at Big 12 Media Days.
He did that Media Days, and then he got asked the same question again when we were at when we were doing interviews, of course, because that question comes up to every single defense player every single time we talk to him. But Clay, just, he seems like he's going to be able to play really free in this defense. And you know, Colt thinks that he's going to lead this team in sacks this year. Which I found pretty interesting. He mentioned that in a chat this morning, and he is a great pass rusher. And if they're going to bring a ton of blitzes, Clay could be a guy that gets to the quarterback a ton. And I'm expecting a massive year from him. And we've talked about the most irreplaceable guy on the defense being Clay Johnston. I think we've talked about it ad nauseum, it feels like. But he really is. He really, really is. And I'm excited to see him play this year. got a new number, new look. I think he's going to be feeling and playing pretty good this year.
Yeah, so he's number four. Number five will be worn this year by another newcomer to the single digits. He drops the one off his jersey. And number five will be Denzel Mims, senior wide receiver, who has obviously been talked a lot about this offseason. On a ranking of most well-known Baylor players, I think he'd probably be top three, along with Clay and Charlie. And that'd probably be about it as far as just well-known guys. But Denzel Mims has been impressing, and we've heard from Matt Rhule and from some of the other assistants about kind of the change they've seen in him and his work ethic to an extent. And, I mean, from my standpoint and not being able to be there in the locker room every day and see every single thing about these guys and their personalities, I mean, as much of his problem from where I'm sitting and the only vantage point that I have was just really confidence. So it sounds like he's playing with a lot of confidence. It sounds like he's sharpened up his game in some other areas, and I think that's a good sign because they don't give these away just to the star players just to do it. They don't do that. This is absolutely 100% earned and voted on and at Coach Rhule's discretion. So Denzel Mims earned it. He's number five this year.
Yeah, and I think we both would agree up to this point of the names that they've released, this is the most important name that was on the list. Mm-hmm. And it's not to take anything away from the other guys, but I think the step that he had to go to from the beginning of last year to this point where he's getting a single-digit number was probably bigger than just about it, than I think everyone on this list. I mean, yeah. I don't think anyone really thought that he was going to turn the corner to this level where he's getting voted on by his teammates for, you know, the work ethic and the leadership. But I can tell you all fall camp, that's all we've continued to hear is just how hard he's been playing this fall and how he's really been pushing himself. I mean, we've gone out there and we've seen him in, you know, the red jersey at times, but he's still out there trying to, you know, get better and trying to take that step, even when he's not 100%. And I think that Denzel is a guy that's due for a big time year this year, this senior season. And he's one that I was really happy to see his name on this list just from, you know, the conversations we had at Big 12 Media Days and everything like that. I think that this could be a real positive momentum for him going into the season.
And with the two remaining single-digit numbers that have been announced, three of them still open as of right now, but I'm almost positive they will have been announced by the time most everyone, because that's just how it goes. But of the two remaining, both are repeat guys once again. Number six this year will be worn once again by running back Jamichael Hasty, the young man out of Longview. And Matt Rhule said earlier this week when talking about handing out the single digits, that first wave, because now we've had two waves of them with probably just the one more to go to finish out the final three, that Jamichael Hasty might have been the biggest that he thought was the biggest vote earner that he had ever had while doing this as a head coach. So in his couple years at Temple and his 3 years now at Baylor, that's the biggest, I guess, margin that a player has earned as far as the votes go, which are not just fellow players. They're the entire coaching staff. They're peripheral people, the people that you don't know their names, but they put on the product for you. Everybody, I think, inside those walls has a say to an extent. And so that's very, huge praise that Matt Rhule has given Jamichael, saying that in all his time as a head coach, which I realize isn't like 20 years long, but still, it's been long enough now where he's not like a new booty do it all, that Jamichael was the biggest vote earner.
Yeah, and that's the biggest no-brainer on the list. We've heard this for a long time. We know he's one of the top weightlifters on this team, just, work ethic, not really challenged ever, because he puts in the work to get himself to the point where he's successful. And he was the number one vote getter. I also wanted to mention Sam Tecklenburg was actually the third most, he got the third most votes, and obviously a offensive lineman can't get this award, but it just shows you the respect level everyone has for Sam. But he will not take up one of the spots. There will still be three more. But I just wanted to throw that out there, that he was actually the third vote getter and people still voted for him, even though they knew he couldn't wear the number.
Yeah, it's pretty high praise. That's for sure. That's why I think Matt Rhule made a point to mention that, was because it was not the first time I think that he'd ever seen that, but it's just surprising in a good way that the players and others took initiatives to still want to put him out there and give him that praise, knowing full well that he's not going to get the payoff for it. I guess the payoff for him would be that he's got that respect level from everyone around. So that's pretty cool on Sam Tecklenburg. So Jermichael in number 6. Number 7 is open. Number 8, the final digit that has been announced so far, with 2, 7, and 9, the ones to be filled. But Henry Black, who is one of like 3 of these single digits who quite frankly could be listed at like 4 different positions. I was sitting there the other day, I was tweeting out the single digits thing. I put cornerback Graylin Arnold out of habit because that's what he's been for 4 years. And I was like, oh, wait a second, he's a safety. And I went back and corrected it and deleted it. And then I put it back, and then I realized like somebody, maybe it was somebody else that I'd mistaken the first time. So I posted it a second time. I was like, oh, Graylin Arnold's not a cornerback technically now. So I forget who the other one was. Might have been like Henry Black. I put linebacker instead of DB. But like so many of these guys are playing unique positions. Like Henry Black's technically a safety, but he's also technically a linebacker. And it's just kind of wild how that goes. Graylin Arnold's a safety, but you know, dadgum well, he's going to play some corner, you know, that kind of a deal. But Henry Black is another one. It's like, is he a linebacker? Is he a safety? What is he? But he is number 8 once again for the second year in a row for him to earn that single digit. Or is it the third year in a row? He didn't get the first year, did he?
I don't
think so.
No.
But second year in a row for sure that he's rocking a single digit. So
yeah, he was 28, I think, that first year.
First year, yeah.
I think so.
So 2 in a row for him. That's great as a junior and a senior, an upperclassman, to earn those. So Henry Black's number 8.
Yeah, and again, he was the last one we talked to this week, and he was excited about it too. It's all about that work ethic, and I think that the fact that, you know, these guys are earning these awards like that, it just shows to them, I think, solidifies their hard work and just kind of what they mean to the team. And I think Henry's another guy that just really appreciated that. And we keep saying, oh, this guy's expected to have a big year. Well, Henry's another one that's expected to take a big jump this season, and being in Coach Snow's system, you look around, I mean, there's a lot of veterans on this defense, and in that secondary in particular, I think there's some big moments ahead potentially for this group if they can really figure it out. But yeah, that's pretty much it. The 3 spots left are 2, 7, and 9, and so I guess the only incumbent to the numbers is John Lovett at 7, right?
Which makes me think he's probably going to get it again. The fact that 7 is still open.
Yeah, that
which
would make sense.
I mean, he got it 2 years in a row.
And he's wearing 27.
He got it as a true freshman. So yeah. I'm going to have a hard time believing that his work ethic and all that dropped off between his sophomore and junior year, which would be really the only way. Or others have just gone so far above and beyond that they've like passed him somehow. But I've always heard how hardworking he is in the weight room, on the practice fields, and all that. So, yeah, I do expect him to probably be number 7 again, if I had to guess. And as far as the other two go, I mean, there's so many different ways you can go. I know inevitably Charlie will get brought up. But, you know, Blake Lynch would be a good candidate to potentially be a guy like that. And there's some others as well. As Matt Rule said the other day, they've got like 15 worthy guys, but only 9 jerseys to dole out. So there will be a handful of players who are perhaps deserving that just won't get the opportunity this year at least. But yeah, I would expect John Lovett to be in 7. As far as the other two go, I mean, I threw Blake Lynch out there, but I really have no idea.
Yeah, Blake Lynch would be one that I would think would be, you know, maybe number 9. I think that could be interesting. I also think, you know, a guy like James Lynch wouldn't surprise me either. But there's a lot. I mean, you mentioned it. There's so many guys on this team that could get that. Chris Platt, I mean, he's another one that potentially could be on there. I mean, there's a ton of guys that definitely could be brought up for these positions. I just hope they all get filled out this year. That's just my hope, and who knows? We'll see if it happens, but there are some really good candidates and really deserving. But I know the one that everyone I feel like wants to see on there is Charlie Brewer. So we'll see if that happens, and we'll see if he would even take it because he's worn 12 for his whole career pretty much.
Yeah, and maybe he doesn't earn it. Maybe that's a possibility as well.
For
but
sure.
Yeah, Blake Lynch would just have to drop the 1 off his jersey. So a lot of people would just drop in the 1 digit to have the single digit like Clay Johnston. And maybe Blake Lynch could do that with the number 2 potentially. But yeah, those are your single digits thus far. So we'll see who 2, 7, and 9 are. I would think by the end of this week, I would think that there, as much as I'm joking about it, there probably is a chance that when most people are listening to this, we may know by now. Going in to meet the Bears, especially on Saturday, I would think they'd kind of want to know and have rosters a week out finalized and all that kind of stuff as well. But we'll see. It'll be cool to find out who those three guys are, though. But a pretty good group. And definitely, you know, the first year I felt like they were kind of stretching almost to, like, make it work. And they had had so little time with these guys, really. I mean, they'd had 6 months to 6 to 8 months at that point in time. But still, it just felt kind of out of sorts a little bit. This feels like way more solidified and way more the players that you want to see getting these types of jerseys. Like that. Now that we're seeing Clay Johnson's grabbing one and the like. And I know a lot of these guys are just repeat guys that are just now older. But, yeah, I think the single digits thing is starting to settle in is, I guess, what I was getting at.
Yeah, and Mims as well is another one I think everyone was, you know, hoping would get a single digit eventually. So he's right there too. But, yeah, I think you're seeing – the quality, I guess, is kind of what you're hinting at, the quality of the nine being at the level that I think everyone was expecting to be at year one. But, yeah, I think that it'll be interesting. I'm also curious if this starts to become, you know, we haven't seen a ton of guys, you know, graduate, vacate, and then vacate the number, and then it's like, do the numbers stick to the position you play? Like,
right.
Jalen Hurd was 5 last year. Now Denzel Mims is 5. I thought that was kind of interesting that they kept. I know Denzel was 15, so it makes sense. But still, it'll be interesting to see how these progress over time, I guess.
Yep. So there's a little single-digit talk. I'm going to get into some of the things Matt Rhule had to say. We kind of touched on a few of them already, quite frankly, and talking about some of these players and some of the glowing words that he had to say about some of these guys. But let's touch on the newest commit as well. Mose Jeffrey, late last week, was the day after we recorded, of course. Mose Jeffrey from the junior college ranks here in the state of Texas pulls the trigger and commits to Baylor. And you obviously weren't expecting this, at least the timing of it, expecting it to drag out a little bit longer, potentially. But we know Iowa State was in the mix. They were offering him to come in and, you know, start getting into the routine of things and would be on scholarship and everything like that. But Baylor's able to land an offensive lineman and I guess just keep building that depth.
Yeah, and it was actually my mistake that we didn't talk about it because I did know it was coming.
Oh.
What am I talking about? I knew 100% that he was making a choice within the week.
You said to my face last week, there's nothing going on in recruiting.
Nothing going on, I know. And I even posted notes about it, that it was going to come down to this week or last week. But the issue was he was going to basically tell me when it was going to happen, and he didn't. He kind of just went rogue on it.
So, I don't need you anymore.
Yeah, exactly. So it's interesting, though. And it's one of those things where I think it just shows the kind of trust level that recruits have with this staff, because he had the choice. He could be at Iowa State right now, be on their roster, redshirt, and be on that team right now.
Yeah.
But he decided to wait. And he's not going to arrive to Baylor till, I believe, December as a midterm guy. So he's got a year at Kilgore, one more year at Kilgore. The hope is that maybe he'll redshirt. If not, he'll come in, obviously, as a junior to Baylor. So we'll see how that all plays out. But this is a nice get, and it's another one of those things where Baylor sees that they need to upgrade at guard. And I think they're going to see a wave of guys graduate, and so they want to have some depth at that position. And bringing in an older guy to kind of solidify that group a little bit is really nice. And I think Mose is very talented, very strong. You watch his film, he's pancaking guys left and right. And he might come in and immediately be one of the better run blockers on this team. So I'm interested to see how that plays out next season. He's got some footwork to work on, but I think the power, explosiveness, and the athleticism is there. And so this is a great get. And like I said, for him to have this kind of trust and wait one more year at Kilgore, that's big. I mean, that's huge.
So the second offensive line commit that they've received, one from the high school ranks and one from now the junior college ranks, they're at 14 total. So getting down to these final few spots as we sit here right now, obviously there could always be attrition. During the season, we've seen that before plenty of times. We've seen it postseason, what have you. There's always one or two scholarships that could, you know, potentially open up or whatever. There's also the chance that none of them open up because, quite frankly, while there's been a lot of attrition around here, it's not been the type that I would have expected when Matt Rhule first arrived. I mean, you had your problem children that acted out and just couldn't stay straight, your Terrence Williamses and those guys. But then you kind of ran into, you know, this past year with some of these guys just, not that they can't cut it, but they can't cut the work. They just can't. They just don't want to do it. You know, I mean, the obligations that they have. So we've seen some of that type of attrition. We've seen, you know, depth chart. Oh, not going to see the top of this thing anytime soon. I better bounce on out of here. We've seen that type of attrition. But, you know, for all the guys who have left, I mean, I think they've actually done a really good job in kind of keeping the main thing together, and even when they have lost a guy with a bit of a name, or even in, you know, the case of Terrence Williams 2 years ago, a couple of years of experience behind him, you know, I think they've made moves that have always turned out for the better, ultimately, when it comes to any of that. So, having said all that, anyways, is that I'm not expecting like a ton of attrition. If it is, it'll be like a couple, like a Raja Preciado just decides out of the blue, like, I'm just not going to do this anymore, Jordan Tolbert, or whatever. But you got your main pieces, and so barring some type of crazy attrition, they're sitting there with a little over a handful of spots remaining just to get to 20, and it's one way or the other not that far off from that mark.
Yeah, and 14 was the number I was kind of thinking coming in, that right before the season they'd probably get to right around 14, and now they're kind of just going to – there's literally a few guys that they are really – recruiting hard at this point. And as you kind of go through this season, when guys start posting their first three games or different things like that on their huddle, that's when you're going to start seeing the staff pick it up even more. I think they want to see if there's any late bloomers that they can maybe get on in on really late. Obviously, CJ Stroud and Connor O'Toole are absolute priorities for this class, but after that, they really want to see other guys. They really want to see if they can find some guys that maybe no one's even heard about or seen. And if they have big senior years, offer them while all the other classes are already filled up in the state and try to go from there. But, yeah, I think they're going to wait a little bit before they finally get to that final number. But 14's a great number to be at. And adding another offensive lineman definitely helps any recruiting class.
Remember like 3.5 months ago when people were panicking about the number of commits in this class?
I do too.
I remember that. All right, so in some highlights of Matt Rhule from this past week, not going to get into everything. Like I said a few minutes ago, some of it we've already kind of covered, so I'm not going to get back into glowing on Grayland and all that kind of stuff. We're going to get on through just the highlights of this thing. So special teams and kicking competition is one of the things that he talked about. He brought up how they're not practicing with, like, the speakers blaring and all that. It's just quiet. It's just do your job, and let's just see what we have first before putting them in, like, high-pressure situations. I didn't think this sounded all that glowing, quite honestly. Everybody's giving great effort, but some guys don't get out there and do what they're trained to do. But, hey, that's the kicking group. If you've never been to a football practice and seen the kickers off to the side acting like complete fools at some point, you've never been to a football practice, because that seems to be like a regular thing. But I guess it sounded like they probably need to get a little bit more locked in and focused. Didn't sound like a huge concern or anything like that either, but part of the reason why it may not have been that much of a concern is, one, because it's just guys playing, you know, grab butt, you know, whatever, and two, it's kickers and they're weird automatically. But three, because they kind of already know what's what with the kicking position. Noah Rauschenberg at punter, the young man that has come in as a part of what would have been 2 years ago's recruiting class.
Isaac Power.
Isaac Power, yeah. Rauschenberg and Power, I keep getting right backwards.
So did Rhule. I think Rhule got him.
He did,
yeah, he did.
But the kicking competition right now, Noah Rauschenberg, he says, got a huge leg, huge leg. Hit a 54-yarder during 2 minutes the other day. John Mayers, on the other hand, at the kick spot, is also bringing some competition as well. We saw him in the bowl game last year. So it's Rauschenberg and it's John Mayers. And for Matt Rhule, he said the biggest thing for Rauschenberg, who I'm going to kind of just assume is going to be the guy, it sounds like, is that he needs to speed up his operating time, that he's going too slow, he's going to get kicks blocked. So that was one of the areas that they were really looking to work on with him. And then a punter, it'd be Isaac Power right now as we stand today. We got to see him a little bit last year, as I was talking about. So it sounds like the job's his. And so Isaac Power at punter, and then Mayers versus Rauschenberg for the kicker spot. I don't know about kickoffs. Didn't get into that in particular when he was talking about it, but yeah, that's the kicking situation at the moment.
Yeah, and I don't want to put that on Coach Rule, because I remember now it was Coach Saravo that got Isaac Power and Noah Rauschenberg.
No, everybody heard you say it, Grayson.
Yeah, I know. I don't want
to
put it on him. It was Coach Saravo that did that, but I do. So this kicking competition is really interesting. So kind of my take on it is that Mayers, when they're, you know, inside maybe 35 yards, he's really, really good. When they get outside of that, that's where Noah Rauschenberg's huge leg that they've been talking about a ton really comes into play. So that's going to be a big competition. Who knows? Maybe they do. You know, I've seen this in the past where it's like a specialist within this amount of yards and then a specialist outside of this many yards.
And they kind of did that already, though. They were doing it. We just didn't get to see them do it very often. But
right.
Drew Gaelitz was the long kick guy, and they just I'm trying to think of how many times he actually even would have
they
done
that. They
never
had that many moments.
Yeah, I mean, again, that was the biggest part of me having trouble remembering, is that they just – I was trying to think of moments they had to be able to do that. But, yeah, he was – the intention was for him to be the long kick
– right.
Long field goal guy. But, yeah, it just never really turned out that way.
Yeah, and then at punter, Isaac Power, like you said, Coach Rule said he'd be the starter today, but others are competing. I think Noah Rauschenberg is one of those guys competing, like we've talked about, huge leg. And when you have a massive leg like that and you can kick the ball a mile, you're definitely going to be in contention for both. And obviously he's on scholarship, so he's a guy that they're definitely going to try to figure out how to utilize him in a certain way. On kickoffs, I think Rauschenberg is going to be in line to possibly do that too. Obviously, Jay Sedwick is back as well, so maybe he's in that role too. But, yeah, definitely an interesting battle. I think at the end of the day, Power will be the punter. He punted in the Vanderbilt game, had that monstrous one from the end zone that was great. And then I think Mayers and Rauschenberg will both get some kicks, and I think Sedwick does kick off, but we'll see. It should be interesting as we get a little bit closer.
As we start to get a little bit of a refresher on special teams, and now it's there's going to be other guys involved, like Mayers potentially, so I'm not crowning it this just yet, but this does kind of seem like we're walking into the Power Rauschenberg era of the kickers. And I just hope they don't suffer the same fate that so many kickers that I've now watched for the last five seasons have suffered, of starting off really well, and then I don't know if it's success that goes to their head, or girls, or, you know, whatever it is that can get a college kid sideways. But it's like, there's been like four kickers here, it feels like, that start off, you're like, okay, cool, he's the dude. And then like games later or a year later, and you're like, all right, well, I need another kicker now. Yeah. I mean, that was the case with Callahan for the longest time. You know, you even saw it.
Even Aaron Jones a little
Aaron
bit.
Aaron Jones but, yeah. had some massive misses that yeah. were just like, what in the world is that? And then he would go boot one to win a game, and you're like, what the hell?
Yeah.
So, yeah, they just always seem to have some. They've never just gotten a guy in here, brought him in, he's remained consistent and remained focused and just remained the guy for 4 years. So maybe that's what'll change with these two guys.
Yeah, maybe I shouldn't be too hard on the all-time points leader in Baylor football history, but
maybe
Aaron Jones definitely did have his share of big misses and his share of big makes as well.
Yeah.
Same with Chris Callahan, which is hilarious to
say,
it's
been like a history
makes,
of
yeah.
of 50-50 guys. I mean,
right.
honestly, it's you know, obviously a higher percentage for those guys than that, but not by much, honestly, yeah. the way it felt watching it all unfold. So hopefully there's a consistency there is what I'm really getting at that can last for, you know, good 3-4 seasons potentially.
Right, and it's interesting because at punter it's been the complete opposite.
Yeah.
They've been really good at punter with Drew Gaelitz and mm-hmm. before him Spencer Ralph. I mean, they were really, really good at punter, and they have been. So interesting to see if they can get that with field goal kicking as well.
Yes, one of the players that Matt Rule was glowing about this week was R.J. Sneed, who is back healthy this year, has been impressive in practices. I wonder how much consideration he may have even received for a single-digit jersey. Not sure, but if Matt Rule had a vote, I don't know if he'd give it to R.J. Sneed, but I think he would definitely give him heavy, heavy consideration based on just how he's spoken about him. But he said that R.J. is just grown up in pretty much every way. He's matured, as you expect somebody to do when they're in their early 20s. But that injury, and then last year, still recovering from that to an extent, and redshirting, he has been extremely impressive. And Rule, again, just said the biggest difference, him growing up, just maturing physically, emotionally, mentally. His work ethic is better, and he's now one of their toughest players. So he's always had certain skills, like his hands or his body control, but now he's got muscle, now he's got the focus, and now he's got the health as well. So R.J. Snead, I wasn't really walking into this season expecting huge things from him. I'm not expecting like a 1,000-yard season or anything crazy, but I'm expecting something now that I maybe wasn't all that much beforehand.
Right, and now you start looking at it and you start going, wow, he might be taking Jared Atkinson's playing time.
Maybe, yeah.
He might be, and I think R.J. is going to be a little more versatile. I think he might be playing inside and outside. I could definitely see that for him based on his game. I just think he's doing some really good things with this group, and a big thing is he continues to stay healthy and he continues to be consistent day in and day out at practice. And I think he's a guy that's starting to earn some trust with these, you know, with Charlie Brewer and with these quarterbacks. And the more trust you build, the more that you'll get relied upon. And, you know, he's been here for a while now. And so I think it's time for him to potentially get some major reps and maybe force his way onto the field. And I think that'd be a good thing if he's able to do that.
Definitely. So the way it's been going this week, they've had hard practices the last couple of days. Today's a walkthrough. A Thursday is the walkthrough like normal. On Friday, as you're probably listening to this, and if you're listening here in the morning time, then they're out there on the practice fields most likely going through their morning routine. And on Saturday, prior to Meet the Bears, they will hold a mock game. He avoided the word scrimmage. It's not going to exactly be a scrimmage, more of a mock game. But they'll do that and then, I guess, hit the showers and head on over to the McLean Stadium concourses. That's what the word I was looking for, to sign autographs for a while for all the Baylor fans out there. But they're getting a lot of run for the young guys. He's not splitting up practices like they were last year. It's at least not at this point, but they are splitting it up a little bit to where vets are getting a little bit of rest here and there while the young guys are getting a lot more burn and a lot more repetition, which is what they need as young players. So that's the schedule, the way that it's been this week and the way it'll be over the next couple of days. But yeah, I mean, they're getting into the routine. That's basically what they're just doing right now, is grinding through to get to game week, and they're almost there.
Yeah, it's just a little fake game week, like mm-hmm. we talked about, and they're just trying to get the guys ready mentally and prepared and knowing, especially for the young guys, knowing exactly what's going to happen next week. I think that's the biggest thing, and giving the vets a little bit of time to rest and get their bodies ready for the grind of a season, I think, is big too. So I think that it's just going to be a nice, easy week for them, and then next week, you know, the real work starts, and this is going to be great. I think this is a big week for those young guys to really get more reps and really get more involved and get out there and really go try to make plays and show what they can do. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, the coaches are still evaluating these young guys to see how they can utilize them potentially. So I think this is a big week, but it's also just a really good, refreshing week, I think, for a lot of the guys.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm going to hit on a couple more notes, and then we're getting to the mailbag. Chris Platt said he's looking more like the Chris Platt from 2 years ago, which was definitely of interest. Tight ends, they've improved since his words last week, where he was not very high on what he had seen to this point. Not that he's like disappointed. It's more or less he just hadn't seen what he needed to see. But I think intentionally he said something like that to the media to have us tweet something like that out, which of course we did, and that helps to spread the message. And so the message has apparently been received, because you can best believe if Christoph Henley didn't see a tweet about the tight ends needing to step it up, then someone who he knows did, or for any of the other tight ends. So that they're aware, and they know that they need to improve, but it sounds like this week, or at least earlier this week, and when he actually talked, that they had done that over the last few days.
Yeah, and I think and I kind of hope that Ben Sims heard this, because he wasn't mentioned. Mm-hmm. It was Henley and Bullard.
Yeah.
And when he said that and he didn't mention Ben Sims, you know, that's, you know, if he's not talking about you, then, you know, I'm not saying doing something wrong. Maybe he just forgot. Maybe it's just a mishap. But I'm definitely looking at it as he's not fully on his mind right now. And I think that this could be a message. You know what I mean? And it's a young group. So, again, they're going to get pushed a lot, you know, for young guys. So there's no overreaction from me, but it does tell me that Henley is a guy that has maybe taken a big step over the recent weeks, and that Ben Sims needs to take another one if he wants to, you know, stay in line and be able to get the same amount of reps as a guy like Henley.
Couple final notes here. He talked about Jalen Hurd. I don't really care to go over the stuff he said about Jalen so much. I mean, it's just like, yeah, he's doing well and all of that. It was more, though, in talking about Jalen Hurd and going back to one of the single-digit earners this week, Denzel Mims. He said, I think you see Denzel Mims having his absolute, absolute best camp. He's been an absolute warrior out here for us. So that was very good to hear, because he does say things with intention behind it. And so he wouldn't bring up Denzel just for the sake of doing so. And for him to say it in those words, I think, is very telling of the kind of offseason Denzel Mims has had.
How about the best transfer ever? Because Jalen Hurd is still having an impact on this program, and he's not even here. But Rule mentioned that he's left a mark on this team with his work ethic, and I think a big part of it is they go see him play in the NFL. His first game, he has two touchdowns, and they look at him and go, wow, I'm not working near as hard as that guy did. If I work that hard, there's a clear path, you know what I mean? A clear path to something that you can see, you know, tangibly, and I think that Jalen Hurd still bringing that impact to this team, and it obviously had an effect on Denzel Mims. I guarantee you it had an effect on a guy like R.J. Sneed, who's obviously having a huge camp. I just think that kind of, you know, seeing a guy like that do that for 2 years, because obviously he had to sit out a year, really has, you know, it's shown something to this team, and that's just massive. I don't even want to undersell it, because it's just such a big deal. And for him to only be here for 2 years, only play for 1 year, and to leave this kind of mark is absolutely fantastic.
Yep, it's very glowing, no doubt about it. Now, that's all I had as far as just things that stood out. I want to go ahead and get into the mailbag here and close on out this week's edition of the Fast Friday Podcast. We even got a couple questions from the free side. I didn't even know they listened, but maybe they will start to listen now. So let's get on into it and start with Skim 234. With the switch to a three-man front on defense, what kind of changes will occur as the size traits the staff will look for to supplement the new scheme?
Well, I got to be honest. I think you really have seen it in this last class, especially with the fact that they went in and they got all these defensive linemen, these big physical defensive linemen. TJ Franklin will probably be playing at 300 by the time the first game comes. Garmin Randolph is 6'7" with a frame that could probably put on, you know, another 50 pounds. He's already around 236. Gabe Hall, another 300-pounder. Harrison White, 260. I mean, just big bodies that can hold up in the run game. And then as far as when you're looking in the secondary, you're seeing a lot of athleticism, a lot of they're trying to find guys that can be a factor tackling in the open field, but they can also fly around and make plays and create turnovers, wreck havoc. Cornerbacks are pretty much the same as you would think from a 4-3. They're looking for big, long, athletic corners. They've always been looking for that. But I think the biggest thing with, you know, the shift to this 3-4 is the linebackers. They need fast linebackers. They absolutely need an upgrade there with speed. They do not have the fastest linebacking core right now, but I think they're recruiting towards that. And I think those are kind of the biggest adjustments position by position. They also need those linebackers. If they have that kind of speed, most of the time you can teach them technique on blitzing, but they need them to be able to get after the quarterback as well. So those are kind of my things that I look at, and I think you saw it in the last class, kind of what they were looking for on the defensive side, and I think that will continue moving forward.
Thank you for the question, Skim 234. Texas SVT, what would you estimate TCU football's budget was for this hype video? And then he posted a TCU TikTok video. I'm not even sure where that originated from, but posted a video that
it was terrible.
was not that good.
It was not good at all. Maybe a dollar.
I did I did learn the total cost for that. It was $61.58. So thank you for your time.
Craig,
sick of Kentucky. It's November 23rd. The clock's winding down. We're about to beat Texas by 2 touchdowns, secure a spot in the Big 12 championship game. Record is good enough. The Kansas game doesn't matter. How do you celebrate? A, get a tattoo of Charlie riding a bull on your entire back. B, streak Fountain Mall. C, jump into the Brazos. D, party with Goldmine. Or E, all of the above.
You're getting the tattoo, right?
I'm not tatted in any way, shape, or form, and never even have come close to it. I've always fancied the idea. I've never settled on something, or even like, I've never even settled on a design. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, most people at least know what they want. I've had all these different ideas. There's a lot I'm glad I didn't do.
So Charlie riding a bull on your back wasn't one of those.
Well, that's still good. I'm going to do that eventually, regardless of whether they win the Big 12. But no, yeah, I've never been an ink guy, so that would be right out of my lane all the way. Definitely not getting naked, and I'd jump in the Brazos or party with Goldmine, so C and D.
Me too, yeah, definitely, especially if party with Goldmine means going to Scruffs. Yeah,
yeah.
I'll definitely do that.
Got a little Scruffy Murphys for sure. All right, thank you for the question, but yeah, I'd go C and D on that, sick in Kentucky. Rule Whip, what are you looking for against SFA, UTSA, and Rice to set your expectations for the rest of the season? If we aren't getting good pressure on the quarterback in those games, I'll be worried about how we will stack up in Big 12 play.
You know, I think a big thing for me is obviously the big plays were an issue, and if you're giving up big plays consistently to Abilene Christian, I think we should have taken that as a bigger sign of things to come. I think most of us did, but maybe didn't quite realize that it was, you know, for sure going to translate the whole season. So I want to see that get cleaned up. I also just want to see a defensive line that completely, well, really a defensive and offensive line that completely dominates the line of scrimmage. The offensive line at times did that last year. Obviously, they had a huge rushing performance, but I just want to see more dominance. I want to see guys getting blown off the line, and just that's really my main thing. All I'm going to look at, honestly, in that game is the up front. Offensive and defensive line, that's all I care about. If they're not winning that battle, they're not going to win 9 games this year.
Yeah, I'm going to be looking at how they get to the quarterback and looking if they can limit some of those big plays, because we did see those early on and just thought, like, oh, okay, well, whatever, as you said. But, yeah, those would be a couple of things that I certainly look at early on. So thank you, Rule Whip, for the question. But I think everybody's going to be looking at the quarterback pressures and seeing if that's going to be a bugaboo early on, or maybe something that gives you hope going to the Big 12 they can actually get to somebody.
Yeah, for sure. So thanks for the question, Rule Whip. Brad New 18 with Ashley Hodge over in Italy with the basketball team. Do you think he picked up something nice from Gucci or Versace to wear to the games this season?
Do they make Baylor basketball gear? Because if not, then probably not. He might have gotten some of that from his own personal use, but I don't know, to rock to the Farrell Center. I think all of the Gucci and Versace, that's one of the Farrell Centers, by the Lady Bears head coach on the sidelines. So, yeah. No, you think he would even play with the idea of purchasing one of those Versace shirts that are like $5,000?
Unless it said Baylor on it, I just
don't
see.
Yeah, it's not to say Baylor on it, right?
Yeah, maybe if they did a custom one for the basketball team, oh, he'd be all over that, for sure. But
Baylor Versace shirt. Yeah, yeah.
I kind of doubt that any places in Italy make that. But
yeah.
Maybe.
Well, hey, Brad, we appreciate the question. Hubs, as we've gotten closer to the beginning of the season, have the coaches or players mentioned any player or players stepping up as a leader? Yeah, we've talked about all of that. We talked about a couple of guys just a little while ago, R.J. Sneed, Graylin Arnold. I mean, the single digits, those are leaders. If you're not leading, you're not getting a single digit. So there's 6 of those guys announced, and you can best believe that those are the guys that are going to be, along with whoever the other 3 are, if they go with all 3, those are going to be the guys leading the charge this year.
Yeah, I think so as well. And I think there's maybe some other ones that maybe don't have that distinction, but I think an R.J. Sneed is one that I think we've seen kind of step up as a leader. Maybe not as much vocally, but definitely with his actions on the field and kind of how he's performed. I think there's maybe a few guys like that, but obviously they're not going to get a ton of recognition. As far as the offensive line goes, I think one that maybe, you know, obviously they don't get voted on, but I think that Giancarlo Valentine is another guy that has stepped up his game a little bit as a leader. And, you know, potentially Xavier Newman as well. So definitely a lot of variety, a lot of good leaders on this team.
Obviously Tecklenburg.
Yeah, obviously, yeah.
Getting some single-digit votes. All right, elsewhere from Hubs, how sick of 3-4 defense questions are you? You know what? I'm not sick of the 3-4 being mentioned. I'm sick of the type of question that's being asked about it. Like, how we've known now for weeks about this, and maybe didn't put enough emphasis on it, or maybe learned it at Media Days that there's going to be more of an emphasis on it. I know not everybody can listen to everything, and I'm not talking about fans here. I'm talking about the people asking the questions. But when we're like 3 weeks into fall camp, and it's, so how does that change things? Like, that's the kind of stuff where I'm just like, dude, you know already that this was not a brand new move. Quit treating it like a brand new move. They did this last year. 7 players have told you this over the last 2 weeks. Quit acting like it's something that just got popped on them. That's when it drives me crazy, because that's just lazy, and it's just kind of uninformed, quite frankly. So right. That's where I take issue with it. But yeah, I mean, I absolutely expect people to have questions over it, but let's not be asking questions that should have been asked 3 months ago right now. I mean, yeah. We're way past that at this point.
Yeah, and I'm okay with people asking. Like, the Clay Johnson interview was awesome because, you know, you start asking about his role being different, what he, you know, sees that could potentially help his game and get to the next level. Like, I understand all that because we haven't talked to him since Big 12 Media Days, but the question where it's like, how do you like the 3-4 defense?
Yeah, like, so really? Charlie or whoever,
right?
You're moving to the 3-4 defense.
How do you like it?
Yeah, I mean, if I was one of them, I'd be like, really? That's the question you're asking me?
Like,
how does my job differ? Ask me that. How does, you know, if you want to get specific on the details of it, that's one thing. But just, yeah, that general lob of, it's pretty cool, huh?
You like it?
Yeah, it does nobody any good. It's a waste of time. So I'm a little bit sick of 3-4 defense questions. Was Q's head about to explode when you guys interviewed Ice Cube the other day? Well, thank you for listening to Unnecessary Roughness, Hubs. Yeah, it was, and I don't know if my head was close to exploding, but I was very excited to talk to him as well. I know our producer Steven was too. So, yeah, it was very cool to talk to Ice Cube on our show the other day about his league, the Big Three. That was in Dallas over the weekend. And I know Q had been trying to get him for like a good year since the last time they were in Dallas, and tried and tried and finally got him. So I was happy for him. And, yeah, his head was about to explode.
Was it a good one? Was it a good interview?
Yeah, it was cool. I have a huge regret that – huge regret implies that I'm going to, like, carry it with me forever. I'm going to drop it as soon as I walk out of this metal box right here. But my name is Craig Smoke. His characters, main characters in the Friday series, was Craig, who he played. Come on, Craig! And I heard that constantly growing up, just like that, from people from all sorts of walks of life that just watched Friday growing up, and they hear the name Craig. I'm like, come on, Craig! And the best friend in the original, at least, was Smokey. So it was Craig and Smokey, Craig Smoke. I've always gotten Friday jokes, and I was just going to tell him that he had no idea how much he affected my life just simply because of the names he used in his movie. But I just didn't think to do it, and it was the very end of the show, so we basically ended with him. And, yeah, I wish I could have brought that up just out of fun. But, yeah, it was cool. It was really cool.
That's a bummer that you didn't get to ask him, but that's definitely really cool.
Yes. Also from Hubs, has Grayson made sure his upcoming wedding isn't going to happen during football season? Ooh,
yep.
Good
It'll
question.
Be next summer. It'll be next summer at All some right. point. We're still locking the date down, but it will not be during the fall.
Okay. And finally, please update us on the 1660 cable cutter arrest. For those that have listened the last couple of weeks, and I guess it's going back almost like 3 weeks now, we had somebody show up at the radio station late at night one night with some bolt cutters or wire cutters, and they cut main lines to our radio stations and took pretty much all of the handful of them off the air, some of them for a day or longer. ESPN was off for a few hours. And it was a big mess, thousands of dollars in damage. And the guy has finally been caught. Apparently got caught by Austin police. Austin police called Waco police. And I'm forgetting the exact details of it because I wasn't so immersed in it that I was hearing every little thing that was going on. But I know that Austin contacted Waco said, hey, we heard you might have something going on with this guy or vice versa, something like that. And so they got in touch with one another and realized, like, oh, yeah, he's been doing stuff in Austin. He's obviously been doing stuff in Waco at several different businesses, not just ours, at banks, at various other places. And so, yeah, they caught him. And I don't know his name. I haven't seen an article about it. But that's just all I know is that he was caught. So I'm glad that he was caught. And he's probably going to go to jail for a really long time because, if I'm remembering correctly, just cutting one of those main cables we had is a felony. So he cut multiple cables at our radio station. Took like 5 or 6 stations off the air. So if that's how it works, that's 5 or 6 felonies. And that's not, and that's just at our place. That's not counting the bank that he went to apparently and cut like one of their wires.
Wherever,
but they had,
he was in Austin,
backup
too.
Power, whatever he was doing in Austin. So yeah, that's the latest on that. And I would love to find an article on it, though. I don't recall the guy's name, and I don't even know if his name really got put out there all that much.
That is such a crazy story. That's
very random that somebody would elect to do that, but you never know. Could be some just, you know, war vet. Could be somebody who's lost their marbles. I don't know. You never know.
Well, thanks for the question, Hubs. Let's go, Bears. 08. Hey, guys. Avid listener here. Never miss an episode. Highlight of my morning commutes and makes Dallas traffic somewhat bearable. First time question submitter. We'll definitely change that. We're happy you asked your first one, but ask more.
Yeah.
We love them. So my question is, with the newest single-digit jerseys announced today with Chris Miller and Denzel Mims, and assuming they don't announce the rest before you record, who do you think they will give the remaining 3 to? Any rumors or predictions? Who do you think the guys on the team will vote for? Who is most deserving, despite how the teammates might vote? Finally, when do you think they'll be released?
I mean, at any point, sometime between now and Saturday, but probably this weekend, I would think. Again, I think it would make sense to do it tomorrow, do it on Friday, because Meet the Bears is Saturday. But it may be a close vote. They may need to do it a couple more times to get it right. Don't know. There's so much of that that goes on that we have nothing to do with or hear nothing about. So, like, as far as the question about who do you think guys in the or who's most deserving despite how the teammates might vote, like, I don't really know that, honestly, because we can't watch them practice day in and day out and all that. We can try to talk to people and get as much as we can from it, but don't have, obviously, the angle and the insight that the people actually voting for do. But for the 3 remaining, I'm just totally guessing here because, again, there's guys who I probably think are deserving that you might go walk to somebody in football ops and is like, nope, not a chance, would never be a single, like, not a good leader, great player, but not a good, you know, that kind of deal. But I'd say Blake Lynch for number 2, John Lovett for number 7, and then number, what was it, 9 is the one remaining? That's the one where it could be like 17 different guys, in my opinion. But yeah, the Blake Lynch at 2 and John Lovett at 7, I'll work with that. And at number 9, gosh, I'm just even trying to think of some people. I have names popping in my head, but nobody that's just like, oh, yeah, that'd be a good dude.
Yeah, see, so I guess the...
It was Ira Lewis last year at number 9, so... What the hell? James Lynch for number 9.
Well, because who is the most deserving despite how the teammates might vote? So, you know, I don't think we can sit here and say who the best leader is if you're not in there day in and day out and really right there on top of it. But what I will say is if you're going to go most deserving off play on the field, then, yeah, that's where, you know, Charlie or James Lynch, you know, guys like that, obviously, if you're just going off how they play and perform, obviously that would be 2 choices. But this award is so much more than that. And so that's the hard part when you're kind of saying most deserving despite how the teammates might vote. Well, you know, if we're going to go despite how the teammates might vote, like I would say maybe someone, if Chris Platt didn't get it, he might be one that could have been in line to get it potentially. Mm-hmm. But there's a few. Bravion Roy, I think, is probably another one. But
make a single-digit jersey that would fit him. That's the only question I have.
Yeah, he'd have to be 9.
I think.
Yeah.
Then even then, I think he'd probably be stretching it out a little bit. It's a big boy.
But, yeah, James Lynch would be an interesting one. But, yeah, I like the bets on Blake Lynch and John Lovett getting the awards back. I think that's probably going to happen. I mean, John Lovett getting it back.
John Lovett's the one I feel actually pretty confident about.
Right.
Yeah.
The other ones are just kind of up in the air. He said there's 15 guys. I think RJ Sneed's another one that's kind of popped up recently. But, yeah, there's a good amount. And I think that any way they go, it'll be the right selections, I think, for the jerseys, for what they mean.
Diana Guidry, how do you feel about our depth at cornerback? Feel great about it. Feel really good. And as long as you don't have multiple players getting hurt, it should be just fine to withstand the entire season between Tejada and Barnes. And Graylin can always go and see some time there as well. You got the young guys who we haven't really seen a ton of yet. You've got vets like Jameson Houston. I mean, I that's probably their deepest position on the team other than maybe wide receiver.
Or running back.
Or running, yeah, running back too, yeah.
But, yeah, I'm with you. I think, you know, getting Kalen Barnes back to 100%, that's the first part. You know, getting him back to the level where he's, you know, good to go, then I think they're completely solidified because you got Tejada, you also got Jameson Houston, and I just think that you look around at the young guys, I think Hanspart has made huge improvement, Mark Milton has made a nice jump as well, and then of course Graylin Arnold can always go back and play if they need him to, but that's a good group. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you name five guys and then you have a six that's kind of playing multiple positions, you have a pretty deep group there. And but yeah, I definitely want to just emphasize that Hanspart and Milton have made big jumps. I think Brandon White is coming along, the true freshman, but I don't think this year's his time quite yet.
Thank you, Diana. Grand Grizz 65, your Sikkim team members are doing a fine job. Really appreciate your time and efforts. If you'd give us your list of definite red shirts this year and a list of possible red shirts this year and your reasoning, thanks. See you on the 31st. Thank you, Grand Grizz.
So I have this list written down. I think I got everyone, but you can correct me if I'm wrong, if I miss somebody or whatnot. But so I put together the for sure red shirts. I think that all of these guys might get a little bit of run, maybe except for the offensive linemen. But I think a lot of guys will get run on special teams and different things like that. So Jalen Ellis coming back from injury, I just do not think they'll rush him back. So I think he's one.
Elijah, yeah, no, yeah, they don't need him right now.
No, Elijah Ellis, Davis Dyeball, and PMP on the offensive line, I think all of them will redshirt. I don't even think they'll see the field this season unless it's just a complete blowout and they give them one series or something. Tyrone Brown still injured right now, I believe, from that surgery he had from the lingering injury from high school. Again, I don't think you rush him back unless you really, really need him at linebacker, but again, he hasn't gotten a ton of reps. I just feel like it might be a little bit of a waste to play him more than four games. Brandon White, as I said, special teams. He'll contribute, but I think he'll redshirt. Sam Snyder, underweight right now for the tight end spot. I think he'll play, but I think he'll redshirt. You don't want to throw a 208-pound guy out there and have him get ran over and get hurt. So I think he redshirts. Hakeem Vance at safety, I think he redshirts, plays a little bit. Logan Compton, I'm a little torn on this one just because they don't have a ton of tight ends, and so there's a chance he might play, but I still think they find a way to redshirt him and get his year back. But if an injury happens, he will for sure play. Peyton Powell, I think he'll, yeah. I think he's going to redshirt.
Yeah.
Matt Jones, redshirt. Harrison White, redshirt. Jonah White, redshirt. And then I think Jacob Zeno, unless something happens to Charlie Brewer, Gary goes in and does not play well, then Jacob will redshirt. And so that's my redshirt list. That's who I believe at this point will for sure redshirt.
Okay.
Now, I think they'll play maybe four games, but they'll for sure redshirt. The ones that I'm a little iffy on right now that are kind of in that between tier between for sure playing and I don't know if they will, Yusuf Terry has had a massive fall camp at wide receiver, but they are loaded at that position. So I still think he'll lean more towards redshirting. Gabe Hall, defensive line, I think he'll redshirt as well, but he might get run in the third team. We'll see. Garmin Randolph, another one that I think if there was a rush position, there were four down linemen, I think he'd be playing for sure. And so that's where it's like, how much do they utilize him? I think he could be one that's in line to play. And the last one on that list is Quaylen Jones, who's had a massive camp. But again, the position's loaded. Do you want to waste a year of him unless you really, really need him? Mm-hmm. But he's been awesome, so it might be hard to keep him off the field. Now, most likely to play, this is where I have a few names. Noah Rauschenberg, he's playing as a true freshman, I believe. Niadre Zuzwa, he's playing. Blake Bedier, he's playing. TJ Franklin, I think he's going to play. I think he's going to play this whole year. And finally, Will Williams. I think the injury with Christian Morgan, I think Will's going to have to play at least the first, you know, two or three games. And then I think he might just burn his redshirt just because they may play him. So that's kind of where I'm at right now. Things could obviously change if injuries happen. But yeah, that's kind of where I'm at right now.
All right, let's continue to roll through here. I have my own opinions on it, but nothing that really separates from you at all. I think Franklin could end up being a guy that redshirt, like, in the most ideal world, but that's really, like, if everything fell properly. So I don't really have too much disagreement, if any. So we're just going to keep on rolling along, and hopefully that answered your question there, Grant. We do appreciate it. Defank BU, is a taco actually just an open-faced sandwich?
No.
No. And a hot dog's not a sandwich either. I've seen these these arguments for the hot dogs. No, it's not. It's not a hot. It's not a sandwich. It's not. And neither is a taco. So quit with that nonsense, D-Fank. Martin Hall, who will score more touchdowns, Josh Fleeks or Tyquan Thornton? I'll say Tyquan Thornton. Who will lead the team in interceptions this year? I will say Graylin Arnold.
I went Fleeks. Okay. And then I went Graylin. I think Fleeks will have more opportunities closer to the end zone than Tyquan will. Even though I think Tyquan's going to make some big plays, I think Fleeks will have more opportunities closer to the red zone.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you, Martin, for those questions. Ubby, who are the D-linemen they will bring in for goal line situations? Will they sub some O-linemen in goal line situations?
I sure hope not.
I think they really have to.
No. I think Lockhart, Chidi, Bravion, James Lynch, TJ Franklin. I think that's who you bring
in. Pretty stout.
That goal line. That's a big group. That is, that's three 300-pounders right there, and one that is your best defensive lineman, James Lynch, and then you got Lockhart. So I think that would be plenty solid enough to be on the defensive line for a goal line type if they bring in that many bigs.
Do you want to know why I hope Matt Rhule is still here in 3 years, other than just the main reason being I like the guy and I want him to succeed and do well, and I think he's made a massive difference here for the university and also for Waco to an extent as well. But the biggest reason why I would like to see him 3 years from now still being Baylor's head coach is to see what that D-line would look like at that point, because it has the potential, and we all know what that word means, but it has the potential to just look ridiculous in about 3 years from now when your last couple of classes are juniors and seniors and have gotten up to 300 pounds or at 285. Where it's going to be ridiculous what that D-line looks like. So that's my main reason, other than just obviously liking someone, but pretty excited about that.
Yeah, they're going to be fine in goal line for as long as Rhule's here. They're going to have big enough bodies to fill running lanes. So, yeah, I agree.
Ryan Allen Long, since this is all the rage on the interwebs, Popeye's chicken sandwich or Chick-fil-A chicken sandwich, I'll hang up and listen. Well, thank you for your time.
Well, I haven't had the Popeyes one yet, but I know it's been sold out all over the place, I've heard. So I got to go with Chick-fil-A because it's the only one I've had. But
yeah, and I think he's talking about the spicy versions, right? Are you a spicy sandwich guy?
Yeah.
Because that's been the talk, is the spicy chicken sandwich.
Right. I actually like the normal Chick-fil-A one better than the spicy one, but I've had both.
So. There's people judging you right now.
I know.
Over that opinion.
I know.
No, I'm good with whatever.
The Popeyes one looks good. I've seen some pictures.
It does. You know what, though? There's just not a Popeyes that's close by to me that I ever think to, like, I never think, I'm going to go to Popeyes because it's not anywhere close by. I can throw a rock and hit a Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
I can throw one from right here and nearly hit a Chick-fil-A. So it's a convenience thing more than anything else, but I'm not going to ever go against Chick-fil-A or on most anything, so I'll stick with them. But I have heard good things about the Popeyes chicken sandwich, and I'm definitely going to try it at some point. Thank you, Ryan, for your question this week. Baylor Bala, is this too many questions? I'm looking at the clock. Yes. Melody, one, how do you two plan to spend your last weekend of freedom for the year?
Oh, I'm going home this weekend. I'll be in San Antonio this weekend and working on wedding stuff for the last weekend before I
what do you
know,
think of how
before
you,
football yeah trying to figure all that out, but yes, that's what I am doing this weekend.
I will be anti-Grayson and doing nothing like that and nothing involving any of that, and I will just be kicking back in my place probably and just taking full advantage of the fact that I've got like an entire day where I can wake up, go grab some lunch if I want to, but just be at home and not have to go anywhere.
Are you going to meet the Bears?
Not if there's not a media session.
Yeah.
I have no reason to go if there's not a media session, and I don't see one scheduled so far. They didn't do one last year, so I'm going to say no as of right now because I don't go and get autographs. So thank you, Melody, for that first question. And, yeah, that's what I'll be doing. I'll just be chilling out because the last time to do it for a long time. Who are your picks for remaining single digits? We've talked about that already. What juniors, redshirt, or true do you think will take the biggest step this year?
You know, I was kind of looking at that, and since you said, you know, what junior won, I'm going to go Charlie Brewer. I think that's pretty much the easiest answer for me. I think junior quarterbacks tend to make a big stride after their sophomore season, which can typically be a slump at times. But, yeah, I think Charlie Brewer is a name that definitely comes to mind. Another name just for, you know, a side thing is Xavier Newman. I think Xavier Newman takes a big step this year as well, and there's plenty others, but yeah, those two for sure stand out to me.
Yeah, those guys stand out. I think Tristan Edmer still got a lot of upside. Shocker, I know, but I think he's just scratching the surface of the type of playmaker that he could eventually be, so I'll throw him in there along with Tejada and Xavier Newman. Looking at the rest of that junior class, I mean, yeah, there's Charlie. And I do expect him to take a step, but I'm just trying to think outside the box a little bit. I think that's what I'm going to go with.
Graylin Arnold?
He could definitely count. I just kind of feel like he's a veteran at this point. Yeah. But, no, he's certainly got room to improve. And, yeah, he would be on there. So, Arnold, Brewer. I mean, I think Jared Atkinson, like, doing anything would be an improvement on – basically the fact that he's a headline guy and nothing more at this point. And look, just take that the way I mean that to be taken, by the way. But we hear things. We don't see things, though, and we need to see some things. So him potentially, if he can get locked in like that. But that's who I would go with as far as the junior class goes. And, gosh, I got so many screens up here. Was there any red shirts I maybe missed out on, red shirt juniors? Nope, I think that's it. Those are the guys that I'll roll with. James Lynch could always take another step up as well.
Yeah.
So James Lynch would be right there near the top of the list.
For sure. If you could only eat at one restaurant in Waco for the next year, what restaurant would you pick and why? George's is always
maybe
the
George's?
Answer for me. For me, that's always the answer.
Shoot, man. I mean, yeah, George's a good one. Man, I just don't really go down to restaurants that much these days. So, yeah, George's, what the heck? That'll work for me. I'm trying to think of somewhere where, like, oh, I can't live without this, and not really coming up with too many things. So that's why there's just dead air. It's like, no, that place is easily replaceable. Nope, there's a billion of those places. Yeah, so let's go with George's for its uniqueness, and also it's got good food, good atmosphere, and all of that.
For sure. Thanks for the question, Melody. Bearcats. All right. It's fourth quarter, and we're down by five with the ball on the 10-yard line with 30 seconds left. Who is the one player you want catching the ball in open space, having to make someone miss to score the winning touchdown? This answer was really easy for me. I bet we're going to have the same answer. Who's your guy?
Fourth quarter, down by five, ball at the 10-yard line, 30 seconds left. Catching the ball in open space, I guess Josh Fleeks or someone along those lines would be the guy that I'd want there. But I don't know. I feel like they got a lot of capable guys. But, I mean, the answer should really be Denzel Mims right away. But it's not to me. And that is why I think Denzel Mims has a lot of room for improvement.
Man, I thought we were going to have the same answer.
No.
But we don't. I'm definitely 100% the only guy, in my opinion, that consistently have made guys miss in the open field.
Jalen Hurd.
And gotten yards after catch is Tressen Ebner. I am definitely going with Tressen Ebner in that situation. I think Craig Williams could turn into that guy. But I think in the open field, Tressen Ebner is the guy that I would want with the football in his hands, trying to make someone miss and go and make a play. Obviously, yes, Jalen Hurd would be the correct answer for last year. But, yeah, I got Tressen Ebner for this season.
You know, the thing with Fleeks, too, is that he's going to have more open field than that typically.
He will.
But it's really, if you're at the 10-yard line, you need to make, like, one move. And I think he's got moves. So I'd have confidence in him, like,
for
catching
sure.
a little screen, juking the dude, and being able to put it in the end zone. But,
definitely.
Yeah, Ebner's a good choice as well. Thank you, Bearcats. Stifler's mom. Baylor is -38 versus SFA. What side are each of you taking? Also, West Virginia is only 7.5 point degenerates. 7.5 point favorites at home against James Madison. That's candy from a. Now I'm going to say that right. I'm not a gambler, so point spreads and all that kind of stuff is not really my alley. But Baylor 38 versus SFA point favorites. I'm taking Baylor in that. Although that's a large point spread. I wouldn't put my own money on that, but if I'm spending somebody else's, yeah, I'll take that. And WVU 7.5 point. That's a really good question, man. James Madison is super solid, and I don't know what to expect from West Virginia at all. I mean, I've heard great things about Neil Brown, but then they've also got a lot to replace. So it might take him a little bit of time, just like it's taken Matt Rhule. So, don't come to me for gambling advice. That'd be the first thing I'd tell you.
Yeah.
38's really large, man.
I'll take the Baylor minus 38, but geez, that is... Not 100% confident in that, but
that's 5+ touchdowns. I don't know that I could do that,
but I'll take it. Why not? And then for the other one, I'm telling you,
Art Brough still coach? Because yeah, sure, I'll take that right away.
Well, I gotta tell you right now, there is no way I'm betting on any West Virginia game early in the season because I am not confident in that team. And James Madison, I believe, is preseason like number one in FCS, and they have 20 returning starters. They lost their head coach as well, but they brought in a really, really good new one. I do not like that game. I would not pick that game. I think West Virginia will win, but I am not confident in that at all.
Thank you, Stifler's mom, for the questions. So you got no answers from us, basically.
Yeah, sorry about
gambling.
That.
Theo 16, why aren't we allowed to play Mo Bamba at football games anymore?
I didn't know that was a thing.
News to me. Have no idea. USNA 82. Only if you have time for them. Love the podcast. My wife hates them. We listen to as we drive home from D.C. on Fridays. Makes a ride on I-95, I-64 go so much faster. At least for me, next Friday we will listen on the plane to Dallas. One, who is doing the music broadcast at the stadium during games this year?
No idea.
No, whoever was doing it last year. Was it Derek? No, Derek Westbrook?
Is he?
Was that who it was?
I don't know.
I don't remember either. Whoever was doing it last year is going to be the one probably, but have no idea on that. Two, who do you predict is the first walk-on that will play a normal play this season, not special teams?
Jaron McVay.
Yeah, Jaron McVay. Three, who's the holder for PATs and field goals, Wetzel or Jumpin' JS?
I think it's Wetzel. I think it's Wetzel right now. I believe he's the one, but I do think that Jay Sedgwick is the backup maybe. Doing that, I believe.
Yeah, I want to say Rule's talking about that, and I think it was Wetzel for some reason. Or at least that's what I remember. Four. Are we going to run a Bearcat formation, and who will be the Bearcat halfback? He listed out some names. No idea. I don't really see the need to, quite frankly, unless they're short yardage and just really need a yard. If that's the case, then I mean Gary Bohannon would be an excellent choice. Abram Smith might be their pounder, but we have seen nothing of him so far. So I don't know if they're comfortable with him taking direct snaps on the goal line or for picking up a yard. So, I mean, you know, Squirrel, I don't know if they'd want a direct snap to him. Atkinson, I don't know that he's really in line for much right now, just reading the tea leaves. So what do you think? I just don't think we're going to see it that much. It was one thing when you had Jalen Hurd because that was Jalen Hurd, you know. Yeah.
I think it could be Gary, just to give him a role, and maybe they've been practicing that a little bit. I could see that. He's a big dude. So, yeah, I'll go with Gary if I were to guess at this moment, but they got a lot of candidates for it. But I agree, they don't have to be very gimmicky, I don't think.
Finally, USN 82, Craig, get on board with Ryan Miller. Never off board, I don't think. He'll have at least three unassisted tackles on Saturday night. He's the next K-State Will Geary, built like him and has that leverage game Geary had.
Oh, my goodness. If he's as good as Will Geary, then Matt Rhule is going to be very, very happy. We'll see if he gets to that point. But I think Craig and I are both in the boat that we haven't gotten to see enough of him yet. And all we have right now is that first year where it just was a struggle on the offensive line. So give him time, and then we'll get to that point. But, yeah, he could be very good, though. He definitely could.
Yeah, definitely. All right, we got a couple from the free side, one more from the premium. Yankee Bear, hope I'm not too late. Who does the shift in the defensive line from a four-man to three-man hurt and help? Could a shift in stats as a result impact draft status? Said another way, could this front remove potential sack totals one might have achieved and therefore attract less looks from scouts, less attention from the media, etc.?
I can tell you right now
no.
that an NFL scout is going to watch a ton of film, and if they see you in a three-man front and they see you getting double-teamed and see you beating a double-team for a sack, that is far more impressive than then seeing you line up in a normal four-man front and beating one guy. And so if they're referring to a guy like James Lynch, then no. I do not believe that impacts them. The secondary, it'll only help because you're getting more guys on the field, giving more opportunities. I think the only ones that could hurt is that three-man front, but I truthfully think that it'll be great for the scouts to see that on film because there's a lot of teams in the NFL that run 3-4.
Yeah. I think the linebackers could be a little bit of an issue for some of them, just the fact that they could look a little bit slower in space. That could be a little bit of an issue, but I mean, I think that issue is going to become apparent eventually anyways. The draft process is so thorough. They're not just popping on 2019 and saying, all right, we know everything about this guy. I mean, they're going to the deepest depths to find out every little thing about you on the field, off the field, et cetera. So, it'll have a minor effect, if any, and actually could have more of a positive boost for some guys.
Yeah, and you're going to have to run a 40. So they're going to know right. How fast you are. Like, they're going to know. But, yeah, I would not read too much into that. And honestly, it could help some guys. Because some guys, frankly, some NFL scouts will say, we're not drafting you because you played in a 4-3. You know, because we don't see that. But other people will be like, you know, we can see you converting to a 3-4 defense because you played it. You
right. Know? From the Freeboard, Grizzair, dang, I wish I had a question because I always want to ask one, but now that you're opening it up to the freeze, I can't think of anything. I wish I would have read that. Thank you, Grizzair. Bears to Canes, if the Big 12 were to eventually expand to 12 schools, which two programs would you prefer we add, and please explain why the correct answers are A&M and Nebraska?
Those are, I'll say A&M can be the correct answer, sure, but they'll never come back. Nebraska, no. I don't see any need to bring them back. I like Nebraska. I think they're a good football program, but they're not, I just don't think that would be necessarily the biggest, you know, team to bring in. If we're talking any team in the country, then no. But if you're talking realistic, then I wouldn't mind bringing in Arizona State. A lot of talented kids from that Arizona area that you could potentially get. I think another realistic one, UCF, USF, open up a Florida pipeline. Those are a few of the teams that I would look at. A&M and Nebraska aren't really realistic to me. So if we're going unrealistic, then heck, okay, yeah, bring Clemson and Florida State on over, right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I'm at with that.
Yeah, the old Big 12's dead. Those teams aren't coming back. Nebraska, I would, like, leave a crack of light, but they're making so much money from the Big 10 that I don't know how appealing that really is, and why get settled in just to leave again, you know? So, plus the biggest issue with Texas or Nebraska to begin with was Texas, so why come back to that? They didn't even have the Longhorn Network when Nebraska left, did they?
Yeah, they did.
Did they?
That's why they left.
But, I mean, there's a big part of the reason why. Yeah, but there's a lot of stuff before that right. That Nebraska
was just
was,
the final hammer.
Yeah. So, they weren't around for long when it was around, so they're not coming back to it now. It's fully entrenched and on, you know, every screen imaginable. Look at the way the things are being divvied up right now in the Big 12. You know, Oklahoma and Texas could talk this big S. And I say that because it gets so frustrating to me. Like, we'll just go to another conference and we'll do all that.
Yeah.
You realize you're not going to go there and go undefeated in the super conference, right? Like, you realize that you've got as close to a cakewalk with this conference right now as you're ever going to have.
Unless you're in the Pac-12.
You're not going to go join the SEC, OU, or Texas and go 14-0. You're not. You're not going to go do it in the ACC. You're not going to go do it in the Big Ten. You're not going to do it. You can go to the Pac-12, maybe do it there, but you're not going to go beat.
They don't do it in the Big 12,
They don't do it in the Big 12. So all these threats and people like that in positions of power just love to show you that they have power. So for fan bases like that, Longhorn 62 has no real power, but because he's a Texas fan and they do have actual power, he feels like he does. But nobody's coming back that left. I just don't see it unless the super conference craze goes insane. And even then, I don't see Nebraska being back with Texas. And it would have to be some of those AAC schools, basically, to fill it out, or the Pac-12 schools, because nobody else is leaving.
No.
Nobody's leaving the Big Ten or the ACC or any of that stuff right
There's
now.
There's no reason to.
There's no reason to.
Geographically, it wouldn't make sense either. So.
All right. Almost done here. Alf. Are offensive linemen eligible for single-digit numbers? I don't recall any. The answer is no. That's why you don't recall any ever having them. That's why Sam Tecklenburg was the third highest voted, but can't have one because of that very reason. So thank you for the question. And we'll close it out with Little Sebastian. Is this one of the deepest years for the Big 12 in recent history? Clear top and bottom team going into the season, but pretty wide open for the middle teams. Maybe it just seems that way since nearly half the conference has new hires this year.
We've talked about this, and I know you have a little bit of a different take on it, but I don't see that, honestly. I see there being a complete drop-off after Oklahoma State for me. I think that Texas Tech, Kansas State, and West Virginia, and then of course Kansas are the clear bottom four. Now I do believe that one of those teams makes a bowl, but I only think one of them does. And then I think the rest of the conference makes a bowl and potentially wins all of them, potentially win eight games. That's just the way I see the conference this year. It's just kind of a weird year, and first year head coaches that have lost as much as these two programs did, I just think it's going to be tough for them in year one, and that's how I see it. So no, I don't think it's the deepest year, but I think that those top six are really pretty dang good, honestly.
Yeah, probably not the deepest, but pretty close. Because you know, it's one thing to go ahead and write off Kansas, but if they win a couple games this year, that's actually an improvement. If Neil Brown and Matt Wells are the wizards that everyone seems to think they are, then they'll be winning games in no time. But yeah, I mean, it's deep. I think the biggest reason why you're seeing people think it's deep is simply because Texas is in contention. I mean, honestly. All of a sudden, the Big 12 is so, and I'm not talking about your question, but the Big 12 is so deep and all this. What changed, really? Yeah. Not really much at all, except for Texas is now winning 10 games again. And so there's an actual threat to Oklahoma that's not Iowa State, that is a national name program again. So it's OU, Texas at the top. What does everybody say? When's the Big 12 as best? When it's OU and Texas at the top. So guess what? That's what it is again. There's no Baylor, TCU getting in the way, although they might get in the way during the season. And I just think that the coverage of Ellinger, he's already been on two SI covers this offseason. I mean, is he going to be on four by the end of the year if they go win a national title? I just think that's really blown up the sort of perception of the Big 12. That's my opinion.
And they're not going to win. They're not going to the national championship, and they're not going to the Final Four.
But do you agree with that, though?
I do agree with that.
A lot of it is just that Texas is good.
I do, and I get that, but it is just – and it's kind of absurd because teams that get new coaches typically do not do great that first year. So for everyone to think, oh, Tech's going to be 8-4, Kansas State's going to be just fine after losing the greatest head coach they've ever had, and right. When they didn't have him, they stunk. Horribly, like
Ron Prince wasn't that bad.
He actually was. Oh man, he was bad. And then Kansas, you get Les Miles, you're still Kansas. Mm-hmm. Like, still, I just think that it's kind of getting overblown. And yes, that could be a big reason why. But no, I just do not see this as being the deepest year. I mean, the Big 12 had 9 teams go to a bowl game a few years ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's not happening this year. I guarantee that's not happening this year.
Well, mark that down.
Yeah,
folks,
mark it down.
For
put
the
it,
end of the year.
Mark it down. You can give me all the crud you want if I get that wrong. But there will not be 9 bowl teams in the Big 12 this year.
And we got to go. But I think as well the fact that you're not being blinded by overly negative articles on Baylor on a weekly basis for an entire 2 years. The fact that that's sort of dissipated has allowed people to just kind of enjoy and look at the product. Because it definitely seems better now, right? Because there's no longer that, like, hover. I mean, there's hovering, but you know what I'm saying. Baylor TCU was a fun time period, but let's face it. OU was down a little bit. Texas was down a little bit. Iowa State was kind of irrelevant at that point. Kansas schools were pretty irrelevant at that point. I mean, everybody in the conference had their moments, their 7-8 win seasons or whatever. But Iowa State, I don't think that they're all that different from the last 2 years. But you know, maybe more people are just catching on to it, but they're pretty much in the same spot they've been. They were in at least last year as far as that next level behind OU and Texas. But I know there's big expectations for them this year, but there's no expectations for West Virginia, nothing for the Kansas schools. People are showing Baylor a little bit of love, but would not be surprised at all if they fall flat on their face. Same thing for Tech. So besides two schools, that's where all the buzz is coming from, and that's why I think it feels that way. So appreciate all the questions this week, and we've had probably more this week than maybe ever. At least it feels that way, but we're glad to have them. And so thank you for sending those along. For you first-timers, don't be first-timers and end it at that. Definitely feel free to be a part of the mailbag each and every week. And when we come to you next week, it will be a game week, and we will be previewing Stephen F. Austin. So start, if you have questions, start to get those formed in your head. And we will have the mailbag once again next week as well. But basically a SFA preview for the podcast next week. Grayson, anything before we go, man?
Nope, that's pretty much it. But, of course, if you're not Sikkim 365 premium subscriber, you probably want to do that. We got tons of content coming out. We'll have game analysis from a few of our other contributors, S11, Football Bob will be making articles as well. And, you know, we're just going to get things cranking out. A lot of content, a lot of good stuff coming, so be ready for that. And if you're not a premium subscriber, I would definitely consider doing it, especially during the football season, because we put out so much information that you can't get elsewhere.
Yeah, and don't complain to whom it may concern about $13 when there's been 100 opportunities this offseason to get like $1 a month and just try it and then find out if it's worth it or not. But don't Johnny Come Lately. Whoa, what's that? Yeah, I know there are going to be Johnny Come Latelys, and that's fine. To all you new folks, welcome. But just saying, it's well worth your time. It's well worth your passion, and well worth it. The subscription, that is, the premium side, with the information that's doled out on a pretty much daily basis, from recruiting to team stuff. I don't care what anybody says. I was reading some post over on the free board. Like, I tried it. I didn't see. You didn't even try to experience the premium board if you're saying you got no new information. BS, all caps, liar to whoever was posting that kind of a nonsense, because that could not be farther from the truth. So definitely give it a try if you haven't already. Thanks to Brazos Parking for our spot on the lot here. The tent is up for tailgating beginning next week, so that's nice to see. And they've got preparations going on in full force across the street at McLean Stadium. So we'll talk to you next week here from Brazos Parking across from McLean Stadium. It's been the Fast Friday Podcast on Sikkim365.com.